Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, geez, Dad, not the car again.
Oh, happens all the time with old Betsy.
Have you checked out Carvana yet? They have thousands of cars for under $20,000.
But do those thousands of cars have personality like old Betsy?
Betsy's held together by tape. And there are raccoons living in the engine.
Psh, it's a family car.
There are flames on the hood?
Custom paint job.
No, Dad, the car's on fire.
How many cars did you say Carvana had?
Visit Carvana.com to shop thousands of cars for under $20,000. We'll drive you happy at Carvana.
My name is Travis Bean.
My name is Chris Lambert.
And welcome to Film Colossus.
Your guide to movies.
I like the long pause because if you're a regular listener of the show, you're like, is he going to say the same thing? Have they changed it up? No, you're just being, you're drawing suspense. I like it.
That's right. You know, I feel like this might be like a little bit of a noir themed episode. Who knows?
Did you watch any film noirs?
No, not a single
one. Neither did I. So don't expect any noir talk. today we have 45 minutes. Wow, a whole 45 of them to talk about every movie we've seen in the past 2 weeks since our last episode. I will say that I didn't see anything that blew me away. I watched 13 movies in total. A little pissed I couldn't quite get to 14, averaged that one a day. And I watched several mediocre ones.
Yeah, it's always it always feels bad when you're in a string of some mediocre films, right?
I will say, maybe I go too far to say mediocre. Like, they're probably actually a step above. Maybe a lot of middling films.
Okay. I saw five, and none really blew me away. There's a couple that are on the cusp, and like one that's a little below average.
Nice. Yeah, gosh, what a great tease for this episode. A bunch of movies we kind of liked.
Yeah, wait, I didn't think through that. Oh, we have some amazing recommendations for you today.
I do have one that I think really eclipsed and became like a little transcendent, even though there are some things about it I wish were better, but I'm excited to talk about this one. That's my tease.
Okay. Well, should we list out the movies that we watched?
Yeah, why don't you go first? I think I went first last time.
Okay.
And you gotta say where they ranked. We keep not doing this. We're gonna say where these movies rank in our all-time movie rankings.
That's right. Okay. So starting off, I watched Babylon.
Oh yeah.
That was one. And where did it rank? I made the list, but I didn't write down the Babylon's at 31 of 81.
All right, and these that
so
means
so I put it in the positives category.
Okay, so this is 81 movies, and we say all-time rankings, but if you're new to the show, that is just how many movies Chris has watched since, like, what, July 2022?
Yeah, July of 2022 when we started the list. So yeah. There are, like, movies that I've watched a dozen times that aren't on the list because I just haven't watched them.
Yeah.
You know, since. I had somebody ask on Twitter the other day, they're like, do you really have, like, six 2022 movies in your top 10 all time? And it's like, no, but yes. Like, for the list, yes. In reality, no.
Yeah. People don't like to read the intro paragraph to our articles.
No, not at all. It's right there. It's just right there. But Babylon is at 31. Tar is the next one I saw, which, you know, back to back really long movies.
Yeah.
That came in at 28 in the positives category. Wow. So it's at the top of the positives right now.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if I've ever explained it. It's essentially like a 10-to-1 like grouping, but it's colossal, amazing, impressive, really good, positives, neutral. So positives is essentially like a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Neutral, negatives, flawed, bad, I hate.
Got it.
So yeah, positives category. And then You People was another one that I watched. That might be the lone, no, one of two 2023 movies. And You People came in at number 69 on the list. Wow. So, yeah, it's down in the flawed category.
Mm-hmm.
For 2023, it's also low, but there's only been a few 2023 movies.
Yeah, how many have you seen?
I've seen 4 so far. And You People's last at number 9.
So that's low.
That's low. That's low.
Okay.
And then it's The Lost City, which came in, which I remember when that premiered at South by Southwest, and people were, it was like the big movie of South by Southwest.
Uh-huh.
And then it actually came out and nobody cared.
Uh-huh.
But that's at number 45, also in the positives category.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And then lastly, we have Infinity Pool, the other 2023 movie, Brandon Cronenberg. And that one came in where? Number 62 in the neutral category. And for 2023, it's at number 6, but that ranks it the highest of all the 2023 movies I've watched so far.
Wait, it ranks at number 6 for 2020. I thought you said you've seen 4.
Yeah, it's the places above it. So because it's in the neutral category, like there's the empty spot of like positives, really good, impressive, amazing, colossal. So it's like, I guess it's ranked number 1 technically.
So it's the best movie you've seen in 2023.
Yeah, it's the best that I've seen in 2023, but it's in the neutral category. So it's
wow. You took something I thought was very simple, you made it very confusing to me. You've seen 4 movies, 4 2023 movies. Infinity Pool's number 1 and You People's number 4, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Jesus. It's number 1, but it's also number 6.
It's 1, but it's 6.
Oh man. Okay. So I want to ask about, I guess there are 2 movies I want to ask about. I want to hear about Infinity Pool, but I'm kind of intrigued by The Lost City because I watched that movie early in 2022. And I've seen a lot of people really hype it up, like people whose movie opinions I respect. And I have people commented on the review I wrote for it saying like, oh man, it's good, you gotta rewatch it. I remember that movie being like indefensibly bad, like just like Channing Tatum's great, like he's doing good work, but like I just remember Sandra Bullock like kind of zombieing through that movie, like Daniel Radcliffe not really being a great fit, all the Brad Pitt stuff felt forced to me, like it felt like a movie that just didn't work, like whatever energy it was going for. So I'm interested to hear, it seems like you seem to like it, right?
I mean, I, in my ranking like explanation, I said that I might be inflating the ranking a little bit because I'm a little nostalgic for rom-coms.
Uh-huh.
And having just watched You People and being so like like disappointed in that movie, it kind of made The Lost City feel like a little more palatable in comparison. Mm-hmm. It was like the opening scene I thought was incredibly rough.
Yeah, rough is a great word for that movie.
Yeah, like the Q&A section, it just felt so heightened in a way that it felt like a Saturday Night Live sketch, which I don't think any good movie ever feels like a Saturday Night Live sketch. Even the movies based off of Saturday Night Live sketches don't feel like Saturday Night Live sketches.
Yeah.
It was just a little too cheesy, a little too like amateurish, which I know The Lost City's not written by like or made by amateurs, but that's kind of what it was though
that like it's made by these two guys who haven't done much, and it felt like this was their first big movie, and like that's what it felt like to me, like two people who are trying to figure out how to make a movie.
The end, I think, is the best example of like the bad writing, the problematic writing, because there's like, I like Channing Tatum, I like Sandra Bullock just as like actors when they're doing their thing. It was a little like rougher at times for Sandra in this movie, I thought, just given some of the situations, but I thought that their chemistry kind of carried the day through some of the like rougher scenes. But the end was the thing that like almost caused me to like derank it by like dozens of places, because okay, they go through this whole big adventure, and she's a novelist, she wrote a novel that's like a sexy thriller, and it doesn't do well, it's like a bomb, and they talk about her being like not having, she's been a shut-in ever since her husband died, and she needs to like get back out there. So a lot of the adventure is kind of this journey of her coming back to life in a way. And her and Channing Tatum like clearly like each other. There's like fireworks there at the end. Like, you know that they're going to get together. And when they're finally rescued at the end of the movie, it cuts from them getting rescued to them being on a beach in Hawaii. And we're told through exposition that it's the end of the next book tour. And that means that from the time they were rescued to the very next scene, that she got home, wrote a book, went through the whole like editing process, the publishing process, the marketing, and then not only released it, but went on, I'm guessing, is a months long book tour. And then arrived at this beach to celebrate. And now her and Channing Tatum, who was also on the book tour, finally like pick up where they left off and have their first kiss.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Oh, really? Is that what happens?
Yeah. He says like he's nervous and then they like kiss and it's like implied that they're finally like going where we thought they would go.
But I guess that makes sense for the character. I could see what like more narrative problems you would have with that. Like you want to see more of this journey, but I guess I could see that what the movie's implied is for Sandra Bullock to really move forward from her husband's death, she needs to get home, like write this story about this trip that she had that was this defamiliarization of going through trauma and grief and everything, get it out of her system, go on the book tour, and then she's ready for Channing. I guess that's ostensibly what it's trying to do.
Yeah, without ever like giving us any of that, it, saying it. And the fact that, what was Channing doing the whole, like, were they just not... Like, what was their chemistry that whole book tour?
They just stared at each other from across the room quietly.
Yeah, did they never have a conversation picking up, like, about, like, hey, I just need a little time? Did they never it's just, like, months passed, a year passed, and, like, nothing?
Yeah, right.
And it's one of those things where I know it's a movie where I'm not supposed to think too deeply about it, but I think whenever the logic is... well, hopefully people just don't think about it, or we're doing this for efficiency and, you know, people get the idea. I think that's like a horrible call. And the fact that that's how Lost City ended, which is something that You People does as well that pissed me off in You People. So I'm mixed. I don't think Lost City's like great by any means, but it was giving me enough of what I wanted that it made it above the neutral category.
I think I'm with you that the movie, I was intrigued by the movie because it did kind of have a 2000s romantic comedy feel, like these two people like going off on an adventure or like stuck in a situation. And the 2000s romantic comedies, I mean, I'm a big fan of, because that era of romantic comedy, I think most adheres to classic rom-coms like 30s and 40s. And kind of like the goofy style of those. So it's definitely, maybe that's why I was really disappointed by The Lost City, because it wasn't so much the situation and the narrative and the chemistry was okay, I guess. Like that wasn't so bad. It felt like incompetent filmmaking to me. Like I never felt the power of anything. I was never like entertained that much by anything. It just felt like a movie that was going through the motions and never being that exciting. It just felt like incompetence the whole time. But
I wouldn't say incompetent. I would say like basic. Like it's kind of like efficiency filmmaking. Styleless.
Well, to me, that's incompetent. Style. Like it needs to have a sense of style. Like for me to like feel anything for these people, like I need to feel like the movie has life and has vigor and has its own aesthetic and everything.
See, it's funny because that's exactly how I feel about the Harry Potter, like Order of the Phoenix through Deathly Hallows, is that it's just lifeless and yet you love them.
Yeah. Well, David Yates knows what he's doing. I also want to hear about Infinity Does Pool, he? Though, because that's one I want to see.
Infinity Pool.
Cronenberg.
It has the style that you want. There's definitely like that sense of a filmmaker that is confident in what they want to do with the work, presenting it in their style. Like I feel like I got a sense of the filmmaker, which I always enjoy. It's just I also felt like I got the sense of somebody that still is figuring out narrative and filmmaking.
Interesting.
So it's like the thing that I really liked about the camera work is that it felt very literary in the sense that the camera would kind of go to details that you could imagine a novelist would highlight. Like you go from the dialogue to just suddenly a description of the water, like the condensation on the glass, like dripping down. And Cronenberg would take that concept that you would see in literature and apply it just from like a cut of one character talking to the other to then suddenly like a close up of the glass. And then maybe like a shot of a bird flying through the sky. like it felt descriptive in that, like visually descriptive in that way, that was cool. But by like an hour into the movie, those things no longer felt fresh. They felt a little just like flourishes that mm-hmm. weren't really saying anything about like the place or the person or the character. It was just like, oh, let's have a shot of these columns because it's like a cool shot, and not like we're having a shot of the columns because it's playing into, you know, whatever's going. Like, for example, Atlanta, which is not a movie, but I've been watching the last season of Atlanta. There's a shot of somebody pulling into a parking lot, and you see the big empty parking lot. It's like a huge parking lot, and there's just like one other car parked, and the car drives up and parks. And I had a moment of thinking specifically about Infinity Pool of like, did we need to see the whole shot of the car driving up and parking? It's just like, is that artsy for the sake of being artsy? But then you realize it's a mall, and the character's walking through what's mostly like an empty abandoned mall. And so that shot of the empty parking lot kind of highlights the fall of the mall in modern America and the emptiness of this place, where I never really got that from any shot in Infinity Pool.
Okay, yeah. If you're not getting it from any shot, then that would be problematic. But that is what you're saying, though, is interesting to me, because I don't necessarily think every shot needs to have that. Like, sometimes it's when you just see a pretty shot, it's part of a movie's aura, and like it's whatever like power it's trying to build, and that can be part that that alone can help aid a movie's message. Like, the columns don't represent anything in particular, but they kind of have stature, and they represent some sort of spirit that embodies the movie, you know? So like, I don't know if that's what was happening,
you got like four of those shots every like 3 minutes or something.
Okay.
So it's like, by the time you're getting it to like in the slower parts of the movie, you're just like, okay, come on. Like,
I could see that being annoying. Yeah.
It just started to feel, especially because the movie was like 2 hours, and it right. felt like it could have been 40 minutes. That was also the thing. Like, the story didn't really go anywhere. It's one of these stories that's about like confronting yourself and this like self-evolution, but it lacks a third act of what's the consequence of this self-confrontation. Like, what does the character get from this? So the mm-hmm. ending was also like, it felt like the middle was unnecessarily long and the ending was completely avoided.
Okay. And God, I feel like you've talked for so long at this point, we should just like the first half should just be you talking. do we want to do it that way?
I mean, I guess so. I could just talk quickly about like my favorite movie and least favorite movie.
We'll jump to me. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Do you have anything else? Did you see Possessor, Brandon Cronenberg's other movie?
No, I did not. I wanted to, but I missed it.
I feel like a lot of what you're describing kind of captures that movie, and I really like it. So I wonder if you would like it.
Maybe not.
Okay. So like I said, is there any other movie we need to talk about, or are you going to get to them?
I'll get to them.
Okay.
Doctora Ramos a la sala de espera. Hay un problema que afecta a muchos niños que no puedo resolver sola. Se llama estrés tóxico, y esto aumenta el riesgo de problemas de salud. Pero hay pasos que los padres pueden tomar para superar el estrés tóxico. Aprende cómo en first5california.com.
So I had 13 movies this week. My list goes back a little further. I decided to include everything I watched in 2022. So between 2022 and the first month of 2023, I have 319 movies. Let's see. The highest rated one I have is Signs at 83. Rewatched that for the first time, God, since I didn't watch it when it came out or anything, but I probably watched it back in 2008 or something. So it had been a while. Mandibles at 98. I guess that's not a movie a lot of people know. It came out in 2020, directed by Quentin Dupieux. I don't know how to speak French. I feel like that's how you say it, though. He's kind of... I feel like what he's most known for is he directed that movie Rubber. You remember that movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he makes
Rubber,
these really... like
Story of Rubber.
Yeah. He makes these really wacky movies. It's about a killer, a tire that kills people. So he makes these very like surrealist satire things. Very much enjoyed that. At 155, or joined all the way down there, is I Am Not Your Negro, the documentary. Do you remember that movie?
Yes.
Came out a
few years ago.
It was nominated for Best Documentary, everything at the Academy Awards. Isle of Dogs, rewatched that one. It's down at 160. Going down to 211, I watched a documentary called Creature Designers, The Frankenstein Complex.
Wow.
It's about like movie monsters, basically, the history of them. So everything from like, you know, Alien to Gremlins to King Kong and all that. The Batman, which Chris and I watched for our last episode, I have that down at number 232. Then that, which has moved up significantly than where it originally was. The Last Dance, 1993 Japanese movie by Juzo Itami. Is that his name? I probably should have looked that up ahead of time, shouldn't I?
Yes.
Is that his name? Yeah, Juzo Itami. It's about a director who's dying while he's making a movie where he plays a character who's dying. Pretty crazy.
That's cool.
I watched Women Talking, down at 238. I guess we'll probably talk about that movie. He's Just Not That Into You. I had never seen that movie. Down at number 245. Logan at 252. I'd seen that before, but I rewatched it. Facing Nolan, documentary about Nolan Ryan, number 262. Tar, for me, is way down at 286. We'll talk about that movie. And Tar wasn't the worst movie I've seen, though. At 296, 10 spots below that, is the movie 10 Years, which, do you remember this movie? It was Channing Tatum, like a high school reunion movie.
No, jeez.
Oscar Isaac was in it. It was like before he was big in anything.
Yeah, this is a 2011.
There are so many people in the movie. It's crazy.
Whoa, yeah.
Oscar Isaac,
cast.
Kate Mara. Yeah.
Rosario Dawson.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Justin
Aubrey
Long.
Plaza, Anthony Mackie.
Yeah. So. Anyway, and so those are all the movies I watched. Chris, which ones do you want to hear about?
I guess you'll talk about 10 Years.
But I feel like I'd rather talk about Tar than 10 Years. 10 Years was just like, it was just bad, bad. Like, I had no life. It tried to be like naturalistic, which like I can appreciate movies sometimes, but I feel like sometimes movies try to be so naturalistic that they just become styleless. Like they don't have anything really going on, and like any sort of themes or messages that would come from the movie are just inherent because you're just watching a regular normal situation play out. So it was just like bad, and it had some like strange... it had some strange notions about growing up and changing. I don't know. I just found it unenjoyable. Much more unenjoyable than Tar, which surprised me.
I'm really excited to watch this, like hate watch this now, or like morbidly watch this. Okay. The other one, I'm curious. I mean, I read your ranking on it, but Logan, like how... if you were just to rank Logan based on like the good parts of Logan, how high would it have been?
Well, I mean, by the good parts, do you mean like... I guess the good things about Logan are that it's atypical for superhero movies, which I really liked. It was very gritty and real. There was cursing, there was death, like there were kids dying. It's crazy, like to think that... like Disney would never let a child die in a movie. Like there's just no fucking way. So like it was very intense in that way. That movie. So if I don't even know how to answer that question, Chris, like as you and I have talked recently in relation to Tar, like I don't know how to like just separate the good parts of a movie and like,
yeah,
if I only just talk about the good parts, like, yeah, I guess it's way up further on my list. But the movie was soured to me by its like overt cruelness. Like it started to feel less like its aesthetic and more like a weird pointed choice to like just keep making these people's lives miserable to the point where I think it started to cloud the message and started to kill the journey that Logan was on. Like there was just never like a normal down to earth lighthearted moment where like Logan's learning something and like you can see it. Like he just keeps being shit on the whole time until he's back into a corner at the very end where he's dying. And like, I guess you can assume that like he's learned a lesson and like he wishes he could have done more and like found a new family. But like, I don't know, the further and further the movie went down that hole, that smudgy hole where like just hell lives and like everything's terrible, I just kind of like kept losing interest in it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is very, very bleak in that way. And that can start to feel very, like, a lot of pressure and a lot of weight.
Yeah. I think the other thing with that movie, too, is, like, a common problem I have with James Mangold is he's such a Hollywood director. And he's very competent. Like, he knows how to make a movie. He hits all the beats you expect a movie to hit. But he hits them to the point where, like, it starts to feel a little routine to me. Like, I've seen this a million times. Like, every James Mangold movie I've seen is the same. Like, he did Ford versus Ferrari, which was, like, was one where it's like, I like everything about this, but, like, it feels so familiar and typical. And, I don't know, just every time, like, 310 to Yuma, stuff like that, like, I can never get excited because everything feels so routine.
I didn't realize he did 310 to Yuma.
Yeah, like, these movies that are, like, they're good. Like, I can't say they're bad movies or anything, but, like, I don't think I would ever want to watch it again.
Mm. Okay. And then, which of those movies kind of wasn't the best but surprised you the most?
I will say, actually, Women Talking. Like, I mean, it's the kind of movie where, like, I don't want to go into it saying, like, I'm there for it. I want to listen to what this movie's saying. I think it's an important movie to be made in today's day and age. Because, essentially, it's a movie about these women that live in a colony. And they discover that the men of the colony have been tranquilizing them and raping them. And, you know, it's terrible. It's a very terrible situation. And the whole movie is them deciding whether or not they'll forgive the men. If they'll, they all decide between three choices. Either they will leave, so they'll just leave and never forgive the men. Either that, or they'll stay in the colony and they'll fight for change, for something better, or they'll do nothing. They'll just forgive the men and move on and like be happy that they have the situation they have. So like that whole situation, obviously you can see the parallels between that and modern society, like these women getting to sit around and kind of discuss the state of their living situation and how terrible it is and what they can do to make it better. I thought that, as much as I think that's a good message, like I was kind of scared it would just be a bunch of talking and be really boring. And maybe sometimes it went to that territory, which is why I don't think it catapults into like higher territory that I think Sarah Polley, the director, usually sits in. Like her movies, like Away From Her and Stories We Tell, are like, I really enjoy those movies and the places they reach. But still, the movie did surprise me that it kind of had a horror element to it, which I didn't expect. I expected it to be more dramatic and just like kind of based in reality. But they really did find a sense of terror in this community when the whole movie is just women talking to each other. Like they're just sitting in a barn talking, and they do a great job of kind of painting the cruelty of their habitat and how traumatized they are by the whole thing. It really was impressive from that standpoint, just because the acting was so good. And it was, it's difficult to make a movie where people are just all in one place watchable. Like, you got to like shift between perspectives constantly and do flashbacks and flash between this and that. So I was surprised that the movie was so well done for something that, for a concept that seemed very difficult.
That's inspiring, I think. It sounds unique. It sounds interesting. Like, I'm excited to see it now.
Yeah. And part of me wishes, like, I want to rank it higher just because of, like, I love what it is so much and what its message is. I just think that this kind of movie inherently is really, really tough to pull off. And it kind of felt stagnant at points. Sometimes it felt a little forced. Sometimes, like, you know, if a movie where not much is happening, like, they're trying to insert things to make it feel like something's happening. It just felt a little too Hollywoodized in that aspect, where I think if it had gone further down, like, the horror trail and, like, tried to find the eerie aura of what was going on a little bit more, like, it had become something different, it could have been better. But still, it's a movie people should watch for sure.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Is it wrong to make a comparison to 12 Angry Men?
I guess, yeah, that works. It's too bad, though, because, I mean, I'm personally not a huge fan of 12 Angry Men. I think Women Talking finds, like, this immense power in moments that movie never does. Like, there are moments where I was, like, really, really moved and taken aback. But there were also just as many moments where I was like, oh, like, this doesn't feel like it's hitting the spot it needs to. The one thing I will say about that movie is, Chris, you and I talk a lot about showing versus telling. Mm. And this movie, again, makes that tough because, like, it's all telling. Like, it's just people talking. But it was one of the better uses of that tactic that I've ever seen. Like, it's a movie that actually kind of needs to tell more than it shows. Like, to hear these women talk about what's happened to them, to hear them go through what they're feeling in real time, like, it was kind of powerful in that way that we weren't shown anything. We were just kind of hearing them talk about it and watching them react to it.
Okay, nice. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then all the other movies, yeah, you can go. We're writing about all these movies on our ranking, so you can read what I thought about all these other movies if you care to read about it.
Right. Filmcolossus.com.
Yep.
It's there in the podcast name.
All right. Best movie.
Oh God, what was the best movie? I guess I have Tar as the best one that I saw.
Really? All right. So we could both talk about Tar at the same time. This is good. I would have talked about that as my worst movie.
See, this was something that we were talking about before the podcast. Mm-hmm. We often talk movies with our friend Jordan, and Travis and Jordan are pretty aligned on, like, the gestalt being the primary, like, you even alluded to it a few minutes ago, saying, like, yeah, the inability to look at the parts, rather it's like the whole is kind of the end all be all for you. And I am more of a parts person, where I can, like, find appreciation in, like, A, B, C, less so in, like, D, E, F, and kind of, like, weigh which one was more important to me. And I think the things that I enjoyed about Tar, like, outweighed some of the frustrations that I had with Tar. And then working on the movie guide for it over the last week has also, like, helped me appreciate some of the nuance and themes and ideas that are there in a way that, like, I feel better about it. It hasn't quite had the turnaround. When I saw There Will Be Blood for the first time in theaters, I was so bored and angry that I literally stood up, looked at my friend and said, well, that's a movie I'll never watch again. And then I spent 6 months thinking about There Will Be Blood like every single day of my life for 6 months.
Yeah.
And when it finally came out on Blu-ray, I bought it like day one and then watched it a bunch of times. It was just enamored and in love. I don't think Tar is going to have a similar journey in that way, but there is something to Tar that has grown on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a big part of what the conversation you're alluding to was a big text thread we had going for one night, that despite any story reservations you had about the movie or like what you didn't like about what they did with the character, you were so blown away by the technical aspects of the movie, like the score and the camera movement and even the acting, that all that stuff in your mind eclipses any, like, you can appreciate all that stuff without being dragged down by the character stuff.
Yeah, it's like I might have liked the story of, let's see, Turning Red a lot more than I liked the story of Tar, just on like a visceral level. Or Adam Project is another one. But like, I wouldn't say Adam Project's a better movie than Tar, because I think all of the filmmaking aspects that go into Tar are like so far and away superior to what most movies are doing that I understand why it's like getting the acclaim that it's getting. Like, I have some issues with some of the narrative being just like boring or dragged out, or but I still think like the highs it possesses are much higher than some of the movies that I have ranked above it.
Yeah. Maybe that's a big part where we differ, is that I wouldn't call Tar technically incompetent or anything. Like, clearly there's a lot of people who know what they're doing, like somebody who can deliver a really good score, like somebody who knows like what interesting camera movement is. I'm just really not in the camp at all that what I'm seeing in Tar is like far and above most movies I watch. I'm thinking somebody responded to my review on Letterboxd and said, like, oh, I should have pulled it up, but like, do you not, can we not enjoy movies like just for their aesthetic? And that's, I feel like actually that statement perfectly captures my problem, is people think aesthetic simply means something beautiful, like the pretty images in a thing, like the colors of something. And aesthetic really is deeper than that. Aesthetic is a set of principles that are the foundation for a movie. Like, every image you see, every pretty image, every musical note you hear, like, they all should be part of a whole. Like, this should be all guiding your piece of art towards something, towards some sort of catharsis, some sort of meaning, some sort of emotional connection I'm going to make and look at, reflect back onto myself. Like, I am really looking for all that stuff. And so, like, while I understand that people really, really like the technical aspects of the movie and, like, the pretty things going on, I, A, don't think they're far and above other movies. Like, I guess I just don't see that. If anything, I saw several moments in Tar where it felt redundant, or it felt, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it kind of, not copied, but... I mean, I'd seen it in other movies before. Like, I particularly thought of the moment where she's in her bed in the the forest or the jungle or something. You remember that? And the bed's on fire. That was from a Peach Upon Wirasthakal movie.
Wirasthakal?
Yeah, Wirasthakal. I always say it like I'm saying it for the first time, like some idiot only speaks English. And just like the general energy of the movie felt very like Polanski. Like, I feel like award season does this thing where people think like a movie like Tar, which has been propped up by the Academy, like does something different and has this energy that like we've never seen before. And like, I just don't see that. So like on that level, I'm not there. And then past that, when I think about the actual aesthetic of the movie, how all of this stuff is contributing to something deeper, like, I guess I'm not that I don't think it's not doing it, but I don't see what's so impressive about it compared to another movie I watched these past 2 weeks. He's Just Not That Into You. Like that movie, sure. Like it's not like a shot from that movie has this like grandiose prowess that you see something from something like There Will Be Blood, but it's aesthetic. It's a movie about how people view relationships and how they move on from bad things that happens in relationships and how they value themselves compared to someone else, whether or not they do or don't want them. Like all that stuff is part of its aesthetic. And the pace of the movie, the energy of the movie, the flamboyancy, the style of acting, like that's all part of the aesthetic. No, it's not going to have some like mind-blowing shot that people write about for centuries to come. But in my mind, like all that stuff that it does that builds the idea, the foundation of the movie, like that's the aesthetic. That's well done. I think that's way more well done than Tar, which for the most part bored me. Like I'm just supposed to be blown away by a pretty shot, even though if the pretty shot lasts super long and doesn't go anywhere and doesn't tell me anything. Like I feel like that's just so much of what awards movies do. And to me, that was just like, that was all Tar. Like I was just like, they were begging me to be impressed by something that wasn't doing anything.
I mean, it's definitely doing something.
Oh, yeah. Sure. It's trying to do something.
There's a lot of commentary on like transitions in culture and time and like the moving on from like previous ideologies, moving into like new world ideologies, and kind of the end of an era or a way of like viewing things. It's also like, I guess, power structure, like a changing in power structures and a shifting that's going on with Lydia being representative of like an older way of doing things, like an abuse of power, like, and then the fact that she's not even Lydia Tarr, she's Linda Tarr. She's who we've been watching is essentially like a character rather than a person, and the destruction of that character. There's some like cool thematic stuff that's going on that I've started to appreciate some of the nuance of, but does that get back to then, do the long shots do anything to reinforce that or like add to that? But I would say, like you mentioned, was derivative the word that you're looking for?
Derivative. Yeah.
Like you mentioned the derivative aspects of it, but it's like, how is He's Just Not That Into You derivative of a thousand other movies? Where it's like, if every movie's derivative of something, would it be that Tar is a harder thing or a rarer thing to see a derivation of or to be derivative?
Right.
Where like He's Just Not That Into You like is a much easier thing to kind of copy, or how does it avoid that same criticism?
First of all, I don't think He's Not That Into You, that style, is easier to copy. I've seen plenty of movies do terrible job of it, so I don't know if that's necessarily true. Well, I guess my point with that was nobody's looking at He's Not That Into You and being blown away by the aesthetic of it. They just see something very common, very familiar, but you don't see that when you see Tar. People tell me when I see Tar that I'm watching something monumental. Like, oh my goodness, like, I can't believe this. When really, it's, and you're right, everything ends up being derivative of something. But like, this just ends up being derivative of other movies that have fallen into that camp that in the past have been like lauded as like greatness. And I don't really see what makes it more impressive than something like he's just not, like, what is it about this style of movie that gets catapulted above everything else? Like, all I'm really caring about is if a movie performs its aesthetic very well. That's all I meant by that point is, like, people are telling me that Tar is something otherworldly when, like, it's just like anything else that I see that's derivative of something.
Like, you have the conversation between Lydia and Adam Gopnik near the beginning of the movie where it's, I think, like,
best part of the movie.
A 7-minute shot that doesn't have a cut. Maybe it has like a couple cuts in there, but it's like you have stretches of like minutes where it's just like on Lydia talking.
Yeah.
And it's just like, technically that's a harder thing to pull off than the average scene in like that has 30 cuts in it or 40 cuts in it, where it's like cross cutting back and forth between characters. It's stitching together multiple takes.
Wait, I don't understand that. Why is it harder?
It is just harder. Like, you can...
What? You're describing, like, a bunch of takes and edits. Like, that's a process. Like, that takes a lot of work to, like, make fluid and make watchable. And I guess I would think that's harder.
It's harder to coordinate a scene where you can't just say, like, cuts and, like, start in the middle of the scene and keep going. It's like if you had to play something on the piano, and there's a difference between playing it all the way through start to finish versus like starting, you mess up, you get to pick up from where you messed up, and working through to the completed portion and then piecing that together. It's just,
yeah, but not if you're talking about putting that in, you're talking about just like the real situation of playing piano. If you're going to then make it into a movie, do I want to just watch somebody play piano, or do I want to like cross cut between their fingers and the audience and the person's face? Like, that takes way more work.
But I think that's what people are responding to, is the technical aspect of getting it all in the one take, or the extended, like the implication of the extended shot is that they had to do all of this in real time. And is it that impressive to see that they had the blocking for it, the movement for it, that Kate Blanchett had to stay like in character and perform all of this perfectly in a way that's like believable? It's the stuff outside of what's going on in the movie that I think people are responding to on a level where, like, you watch a scene in the typical like rom-com or a typical like blockbuster movie, and you know that maybe it's difficult to get like the CGI, or the editor had to do a lot of work to piece things together in a way that's coherent, but it feels like the effort in the filmmaking wasn't as hard, or the effort in filming the scene wasn't as like difficult.
I agree with you that people do think that.
How is that not like...
I've said, I guess, like, I don't see, when, you know, you're describing Kate Blanchett having to do it all in one take and be believable and all that. I don't think that's not impressive. I just don't see why, like, when that happens, we think we're watching something that's above and beyond what movies typically do. I don't think all the stuff you're describing about how a movie's edited together, I feel like you're kind of being a little reductive and simplifying things. Like, that to me is just as difficult to do, to make fluid, to make watchable, to make it all like cohesive. And again, I feel like that's just part of a movie's aesthetic. Like, the art of deconstructing a scene like that and making it part of a bigger whole, like, that's difficult to do.
I mean, like, if you have a chase scene, like if you have two movies and one chase scene is all like a single camera recording like chases down streets, like turning, like all of these action sequences and stunts without any cuts, that's not more impressive to you technically than a movie that has like 1,000 cuts in that same stretch? And
not if it's done well.
I mean, I just don't see how.
I think a long take in a movie can be done poorly, just like I think a bunch of edits in a movie can be done poorly. It's all about the art of it and how. Like, I actually think that opening scene of Tar is probably the best scene in the movie. Like, I'm. It's funny that we're like even arguing because like I'm with you on that scene. I like what it does and how it sets up what the movie's going to be about. But again, I don't know. But I feel like you're getting at something deeper that frustrates me about movie culture is like this idea that that kind of scene, because it did that thing that most movies won't do, that it's special, that it's kind of like above other things, and that these people went to a place movies don't typically go to. Like, I guess I can't wrap my mind around that, I guess.
Okay. So two films, car chase scene. In the first one, it's one long shot, like driving through these city streets, tight curves, like people having to dodge out of the way and get like the timing perfect. And it concludes with going like a ramp over a bridge in real time that's closing off like everything that we saw from the beginning, like getting to the bridge, getting the timing, ramping the car over, meaning they had to start raising the bridge at like a certain time and time mm-hmm. it just right that the car makes the jump. Versus a scene that is nearly identical in action, but they would drive down the street, call cuts, move the car, right, yeah. set up the timing.
I get it. So, but here's the, before I answer that question, here's what I want to ask you. Are you asking me what my reaction is to the knowledge of knowing they did that for that scene? Or are you asking my reaction to actually watching the scene and how it was filmed and performed?
The former. Like, the how, I think that's what people are being impressed okay, by.
Exactly. And that, again, to me, is the root of my frustration, is I don't really care. Like, all I care about is if it's filmed well and performed well and exists well on the screen in an artful way that commits, that contributes to the aesthetic. Like, if it's not filmed well, I kind of don't give a shit. Like, I can be in awe that somebody pulled this off. I can go like pat the stunt performer on the back and say like, wow, man, like I can't believe you pulled that off. But like, if it looks shitty on screen, why would I care?
I think it looks better than the million cuts and just like a close up of a car through a fireball.
If it looks good, like this is the barrier we're hitting here. Like, you don't even care. Like, if it's filmed from like a million feet in the air and you can barely see it, if you don't feel like the intensity of the action at all because the director didn't bring the energy to it, like, you don't care. If you just know that it was done this way, like, you like it.
I mean, I think there's a middle ground between that. There probably is a version of how it like typically shot and edited to where I would say like, yeah, I do prefer that because the far away camera is like so insane that I'm not getting any impact. But comparing like Tar to The Lost City and like a sequence in like each of those, I would take Tar over every single scene in The Lost City because I think it's visually more impressive to have the camera. The performance is more impressive to have that long shot. That's like, kind of, yes. Like, I do find it's more exactly. impressive than like a scene that's cutting a bunch. Eh.
I so that's just like the big difference I think that we have is I don't care how it's done. Like, you can have a long take. You can, like, we talked about The Northman in a past episode. Like, I think the long take in that movie where they're going through the village, you know, like we're following Alexander Skarsgård and you're kind of seeing the mayhem along the way, like, that's cool. Like, the way that scene is filmed, the energy it has, the terror and carnage you're experiencing in real time, like, that long take, it works well in that movie because, like, you're kind of in the element with it. Do I think that exact shot worked just as well cut together? Like, of course, if it's cut together well. But I'm thinking of like Fast Five when they steal the safe and they're like, the two cars are impossibly dragging the safe all around the city. Like, that's a scene to me where like, I don't know how you could properly capture the intensity of that if there weren't cuts. If there wasn't a shot of a bank as the safe like rolled through and like almost crushed a bunch of people, like, that kind of scene requires you to have some splicing to show different perspectives. I feel like that's where we're just on a different page. It's like, I guess inherently, like, it's cool and impressive that something like that happened, that they did a long take, that they planned all that out. But that doesn't work for every scene. That doesn't necessarily make a scene better just because they did it.
No, it doesn't. And especially, like, in a movie, like, I think highlighting that difference between the Northman's long take and Tar's long take is, like, showing off a difference. In the fact that, like, Tara's long take of her, like, coming home, walking into a room, walking into a bathroom, like, hugging her partner and, like, calming her down, it's impressive, but it's also not like they're doing a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, is the long take, is the value you're getting from the long take that much greater than the value you get from cuts? Where I think in something like The Northman, the value you get in a long take is a lot higher than what you're getting in Tar. Especially, like, I went back and rewatched Gladiator. I mean, it's been a few years, but rewatching Gladiator, it's still, like, a powerful story and has, like, really cool moments, but there was still something with the action that felt like a lot, like, very reduced to me. It's the same kind of thing in Nolan movies. Whenever there's action in a Nolan movie, I just am completely taken out by his editing of those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Where if they were longer scenes, I would be more into the action. So, I mean, it's also my big thing with, like, the Bond movie, like Pierce Brosnan's Bond. You have, like, a scene on a boat and it's a boat chase and it's, like, cross cutting between characters' faces. I'm much more into Casino Royale and, like, the epicness of that initial parkour chase. And you still have moments of, like, cross-cutting to the faces and getting, like, the close-up in the mix, but the amount of takes and the shot variation is so much greater in Casino Royale that I just think it's, like, night and day difference between the editing that we got in, like, the Pierce Brosnan Bond movies.
It's funny that you're comparing Daniel Craig Bond movies with Pierce Brosnan Bond movies, because those are all directed by different people. And I feel like a big part of what you're making me realize is this whole fascination with, like, the long take and, like, less cuts. It's a very modern thing to do. It's kind of like an edgier thing that people are into now. So it's not surprising to me to see, well, it's not exactly a common thing to do. Like, lots of movies don't have lots of long takes like Tar has. But so when they do, people really do latch onto it and see, like, kind of the power that's extracted from that. I do also want to say that I feel like we kind of got away from what we were talking about in the beginning, just, like, the how everything adds up to a whole. Like, that's my big problem with movies, when it's hard for me to adore whatever technical prowess is going on when, like, I don't feel what the movie is. I don't know what I'm supposed to be impressed by if it's not, like, leading me towards something, like, emotional, something I'm connecting with, which Tar does not do for me. In that, like, you know, you're describing all the thing that Tar technically does. You wrote the movie guide for it. And of course, like, there are all these themes and character dynamics in play in Tar. I don't mean to say that Tar isn't doing anything. Obviously, I can see all of the machinations Tar is going through. I just think that this is, again, some weird award season hype that happens with certain movies. And people look at Tar, a movie that has been catapulted and is, you know, got the spotlight on it. Like, the Academy wants you to think Tar is bigger and does more. I guess I just don't see why it's doing more. To me, any movie is trying to do something. Every movie has three or four themes you can follow. It's just a matter of, like, is it doing it well? I feel like the idea is that Tar is doing more and is saying more, which, like, I guess I don't think it is. Like, it just, like, is saying as much as, like, any other movie is trying to say. And I don't see how all this stuff we're talking about, like, it's just not heightening all of those themes and ideas enough for me to, like, feel any sort of connection to.
I mean, it's not just the Academy, like, hype machine saying it. Like, I'm saying it. And I'm not, like, some Academy, like, hype person.
Yeah, of course not. I think it's inevitable a little bit, though. If like, would you even ever watch Tar if it wasn't considered? I mean, maybe we would, but I'm more speaking to like the general conversation around the movie. Like, are you yourself saying like Tar goes for more and does more? It seems like you are, actually.
Yeah, I think that the statement that it's making about like power structures and shifting power structures in this very like large and epic way, it takes some time getting there, and I still don't know if it's the most like, if it's the best version of what it could have been in dealing with that. But like the combination of it kind of retelling A Telltale Heart with the statement that it's making about the falling of power dynamics and like the way the future can affect the past and the way that we look at the past, and figures like Lydia Tár and whether or not she will be swallowed by these changing currents or will be able to adapt.
Yeah.
Like, is she going to be left behind or join this new world in a way and find a place in it? I think is taking on like larger dynamics than what I see some other movies like going for.
I just like, that's again where I'm just like, I can't even kind of get on the same level as that. Like, I just don't see why that's more than something like you mentioned earlier, like the Adam Project. You know, the whole reason this conversation started between Chris and I and our friend is that somebody tweeted about Tar who said they didn't even enjoy the movie, yet it was one of the best movies of 2022. And I feel like maybe that's more to what I'm speaking to. Like, it sounds like you've really thought about the movie and you've connected with the elements of it. Like, that's great. But I think the general reaction to the movie is that tweet, that it kind of just has a sense of energy. It has a sense of importance that makes you feel like everything it's talking about matters more, when really, like, it can handle all of those themes and ideas poorly or not, like, or well. And I think a lot of people are just like, despite not enjoying the movie, despite it being slow and lackadaisical and feel like it's going nowhere sometimes, like, because it's going for more, because it has that bigger statement, kind of like the one you're describing, it's better. And like I said, like, I feel like everything you just described, like, I don't think that's more than even a Fast and Furious movie says. Like, I don't see that. So I guess that's just the delineation between us.
Yeah, because I would say that Fast and Furious movie saying like 3% of what Tar's like going for.
Yeah,
but
see, that's just like that again. I think it goes back to the idea of aesthetic, and that you can really like, I mean, not that you're specifically doing this with Tar, but like the idea that you can enjoy certain elements of Tar more than like if the story's lacking. Like, hey, if like we have lots of long takes and the acting's really good and the score is really good, then like all that stuff like adds up to something bigger and the movie's saying more. Whereas like, to me, the Fast and Furious movies, like, maybe they're technically saying less, like maybe their focus is a little more narrowed, but because they're so committed to an aesthetic, because like the movie is kind of one thing and is building on one thing and has such incredible energy around this one idea, that it's like way, way, way more powerful. And maybe it's saying less technically, like the amount of things it's saying, but it's saying what it's saying so well that it's saying more. That it's like it what its message is much more powerful, has much more of an impact, and means much more to me than anything Tar could have tried to do.
I think some of that also comes back to like, what is the message? Like, in The Adam Project, the message is definitely about like, it's intimate in the sense of personal trauma and finding closure with some of your own hangups with grief and forgiving yourself and connecting with this part of you that still exists on a certain level,
mm-hmm.
which is really like powerful and nice to explore, but it is like much more, I think, specific, or like the square footage that it's taking up is like much smaller than what Tar is talking about in terms of like generational shifts and power structures and power dynamics, where it's like, I think you get a lot of movies that are like two bedroom single family homes and less movies that are going for the kind of larger zeitgeist statements that Tar is making.
That's what I'm getting at, is like, that to you means it's doing more because it's speaking to something like that extends so far beyond itself that it just is saying more, as opposed to the Fast and Furious movies, which they're about family, right? We all know the Fast and Furious movies are about family, and that's it. Like, if all the Fast and Furious movies are doing is talking about the power of family, they aren't on the same level as Tar. Like, they can't be anywhere near where Tar is going. Like, Tar is bigger than that. Tar will matter 50 years from now in a way Fast and Furious won't. Is that what you mean?
I mean, not... Yes and no. Like, yes in the sense that, like, it's very different levels of, like, commentary, but that doesn't mean that an individual reaction to one versus the other will be... Like, as you're saying, like, how Fast and Furious captures the idea of family can be so powerful and, like, cathartic in how it's exploring it that you get more from it than what Tar's doing. I'm speaking more to the idea of just why there are people that are excited by what Tar's doing, because I think it's easier for a movie to explore something that's a little like smaller and personal, and it's films less often go for the long take. They less often go for the larger statement. So when a movie does, the rarity of it appeals to people in a way, as well as like, oh, it's taken like 3 years to get another movie that satisfies this itch.
Yeah. And again, I completely agree with you that that is what people want. And I agree that it happens less often, but we are just on different pages and say that I don't think it's more impressive and I don't think it's harder to do.
Okay.
I think it's harder to do something really, really well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's harder to craft such a deep and realized aesthetic than it is to make a statement that goes so far beyond yourself and says so many things about so many people and so much and expands so much time. Like, I guess I don't see why that's harder. That's just a different message you can have.
Yeah, I think it's different realms of, like, some people just like the fact, it's like with literature, right? Some people hate flowery literary writing.
Yeah.
And other people really like it, to where if you see like a sentence that's two pages, for some people they're just like, oh my goodness, yes, like I want this kind of like artistic flourish. And then other people are like, that is deal breaking for me. I want just like the story and the narrative, right? And like this kind of flourishing is taking away from it. I think the long shots and the grandeur of the theme are just also stylistic things that people enjoy and don't often get a lot of.
For sure. And I don't necessarily, you know, I think another big part of my frustration with Tar is that it's not that I'm annoyed that people enjoy that stuff. Like, I even enjoy that stuff. I think my problem with Tar is I don't think it's really contributing to like my connection with the movie and like the advancements of the characters or anything in a way that I like. But I think a bigger part of this, and more of what I was trying to say earlier of like the award season aura or anything, because I'm not trying to project it on you and say like Chris just likes it because of the Oscars. But I do think there is, and I know you've talked about this before, and I feel like this is another area we kind of deviate on, is that Tar is regarded, even if you don't really like it as much, it's regarded as a objectively better movie, in quotes. Like, Tar is above and beyond what we expect of movies. It's the kind of movie you could consider for the AFI list. A kind of movie you would consider is the Fast and Furious movies. It's the Adam Project. Are these movies that like just aren't part of that conversation? It's part of this weird, what I find to be a strange ranking of movies in a very objective sense, that we're all supposed to kind of come to a consensus on which ones are better. And it just frustrates me that like Tar gets thrown into that conversation in a way other movies aren't allowed to. I think that's such a boring way to look at movies over the span of time, to kind of like over time, like pick which ones belong and like the zeitgeist and which ones we're just going to pretend like didn't happen. I just get annoyed that that general conversation, and I'm just annoyed that people keep being that way with Tar.
Yeah, I can tell.
I just think it's just a reductive way to think about art and movies and everything. Like, I just can't even wrap my mind around it, I guess.
I'm more the camp that sees it than doesn't, but I think I know your aesthetic preferences, and yeah, it would be very it would be very frustrating.
It's frustrating that it happens with any movie, period.
There's some that are, I mean, how do you avoid that? What is the,
you avoid it by accepting subjectivity, that there isn't like a decisively movie that's better than others.
Yeah, like I see something, like I'm looking at the AFI top 100 right now, and I see Unforgiven's in there. I think Unforgiven's like closer to like Fast and Furious style than I think it is to a Tar style.
Wow, I disagree with that, but okay, I guess that's not really the argument we're having.
I guess I'm just looking for movies that are like would fit into that, that aren't just like that Tar like that are on the top 100. Forrest Gump's on there.
Yeah, I guess all I was getting at is like, I feel like you and I have had this conversation in the past of like, there are movies that can be considered objectively better. Like maybe you don't enjoy Tar, which I'm guessing a lot of people, maybe a lot of people really do enjoy Tar. Like I'm not denying that. But based on that tweet that I saw, like I'm sure there are people who watch Tar and just like, oh, it just like feels like it's doing more, even though I'm not like enjoying the act of watching this languid ass movie. Like it's better, right? Like it's just better than other movies. It's better than a Fast and Furious. It's doing more. I feel like that mentality has kind of just been steeped in the people. And there is this idea that a movie can actually be objectively better, when that's actually bullshit and not real, and that your reaction to a movie should just be whatever it is. You should be open to talking about a movie and learning more about a movie, but like you can't deny how you just feel about a movie inherently.
Yes and no, I guess.
Exactly. Like, you see nuance in that in a way like I just can't.
Yeah, it's very different experiences for us.
speak to it. Like, well, how can a movie just be objectively better? Like, how can you ignore subjectivity totally?
I mean, I think it gets back to some of the technical. For me, it always gets back to the technical aspects of something. Like, I'm watching The Last of Us right now on HBO. Or like really any HBO show. Like I feel like the style of filmmaking, the details, the acting opportunities with some of the scenes that they give, it just feels so elevated beyond almost every other television show, that it's like, regardless of like, do you like it or not, it's just like technically that much more impressive, to where I think that's where a lot of it comes down to. Like Star Wars is an epic, like legendary movie, but I feel like Star Wars is inherently like has a low ceiling on most aspects of filmmaking. It's just kind of fun, in a way that like carries the day and does enough stuff well in terms of the practical effects, but comparing Star Wars to The Godfather, I feel like it's kind of just from the cinematography to the editing to the character journeys and everything that's going on, I feel like The Godfather is like objectively better. But does that mean it's going to be more popular, or like, is it more fun or enjoyable or any of that?
But that's exactly what I mean, is like all those things you say that make The Godfather better, like those are things we're saying that collectively as a whole, as a movie loving society, like these are the things we've decided make a movie better. Like if you do these things better, you're better. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, which there is an inherent like arbitrariness to that.
Exactly. Like I could say everything you just said about Star Wars. Like I could pick out so many aspects of Star Wars that are done so well that I don't see other movies do. Wouldn't that make it objectively better?
I guess it depends on if we were agreeing to like the value of those things over other things, then I think we could start to. I think that's kind of like the understanding is like an inherent agreement that we value this over that, exactly. Which can change if you're having like a specific conversation of like even taking genre into account, right? If we're saying that the conversation is around like thriller elements or like action sequences, then that reorients the whole conversation around like what's objectively better. Suddenly something like The Graduate wouldn't be in the conversation at all because the action sequences aren't there, where a movie like Raid 2 would be objectively better based on that factor.
So doesn't that render the whole thing, like to even get on a base level of everything you're saying, everybody has to agree on a set of principles that makes a movie better. And those set of principles allow a movie like The Godfather to be better, Tar to be better, 2001 Space Odyssey to be better, but not Fast and Furious, not The Adder Project. Like, don't you think that's like, isn't that odd? Doesn't that limit what movies can do and be?
I mean, I think as long as the entertainment factor is there, I mean, that matters. Because, like, clearly, Fast and Furious franchise is one of the most successful franchises in movie history. The amount of, like, money it's made, the amount of sequels it's had, is it by far the most, like, movies with, like, the same cast?
Yeah, they're in several of them, yeah.
Like, we're coming up on number 10, right?
Yeah, 5 through 9 have mostly had the same people.
Okay. Like, I guess there's only one that hasn't had Vin Diesel?
Yeah, the second one. Or yeah, no, two of them didn't have Vin Diesel, although Vin Diesel makes a cameo at the end of the third one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tokyo Drift, he's not really. Okay. So...
I like that this is what we're talking about.
I guess, like, the Harry Potter movies had, okay, like, 8 sure. movies with, like, the same cast, yeah. But... like an original property, like an original cinematic property, like Fast and Furious is one of the most successful of all time. And I mean, Mission Impossible is as well in that way. But I do think that there's always going to be that entertainment factor. And I think this is something that we see in all, a division that comes up in all artistic genres. Whether it's music, whether it's film, whether it's like novels, TV shows, poetry, like paintings, there's the entertainment factor and there's the technical factor. And there's always like a battle back and forth between those things, and people that champion one over the other, people that find like amalgamations in the middle ground. And I think it's kind of unavoidable in a way. And also the rubric that we come up with, or like that general subjective vibe, is something that's just kind of been honed over the years of like the general idea of what's impressive. Like, I see a movie like Argo, and I think Argo is just like a completely like bullshit standard, like annoying movie, and yet it wins Best Picture because enough people, I guess, decided that it was like entertaining in this middle ground, and that's infuriating. And I feel like that's probably how it is with you with some of these movies that are getting like this kind of recognition over others.
There's so many things I want to get into that we can't. Like, I feel like you're supposing that The Godfather is just more technically sound than a Fast and Furious movie, which I still can't wrap my mind around. Like, what makes that so? Like, that's, as somebody who loves all three Godfathers, I don't know who decided that like the technical achievements of The Godfather is just more impressive than the Fast and Furious, which could just be boiled down to plain and pure entertainment.
Right.
But so this round circle going all the way back to the beginning of what we talked about with Tar. I just like that whole attitude, the idea that there is something objectively better. Like, I just see that with Tar. I know it is happening. So it just frustrates me to God end that like I'm not allowed to not like Tar for very legitimate reasons that I can't detail and list out and compare to other movies that I think do it well that you think are shitty. Like, it's a really annoying argument that I feel like I have every single year to award season. There's always one movie that like triggers it, and Tar seems to be the one this year.
Which, yeah, I mean, you are a champion of like
shitty movies,
disenfranchised films. Yeah, that's
I know it.
Just our way of like phrasing it, me being like disenfranchised film, and you're like shitty.
I know they're shitty.
Yeah, like shitty films. I think, you know, we need that. We need that voice to say like, hey, there's like beauty here. There's quality here. Like this sequence in, he's just not that into you is like wonderful in a way that like, how do you get this kind of like enjoyment from it, from Tar, in like any scene in Tar? Like, eh?
It's funny because I really didn't enjoy Tar, but I have it in the mediocre category of my rankings. Like, there are movies I think are a lot worse. I have a just plain bad category, I have a really bad category, and I have an atrocious category. Like, I don't even have Tar down there. I'm just annoyed by everybody that likes Tar, besides Chris.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, do we end the episode now, or do we talk about the other movies?
I think we're done. This episode has just become, it's become the Tar episode.
It's become the Tar episode.
I do wonder, here's something I'll pitch. Do we want to finish the episode like normal and then like splice out this part and make it its own episode?
I mean, we could.
We talked for pretty much an hour.
Yeah, about Tar.
About Tar.
Just release it as like a bonus episode.
We can't do that if you're game.
Sure.
Let me check with my wife really quick to make sure I have the time to do this. Could you hear all that?
Not enough to make out what was being said.
Well, I don't know. What do you think, Chris, overall?
I mean, I think it works as its own episode.
Okay. The only thing is I'm supposed to help with dinner soon.
Yeah, I think what we have works as like a rankings episode just fine.
Oh, okay. Okay, that sounds good. And If you want to hear my thoughts about signs, if you want to hear Chris's thoughts about you people, just go to our website.
Yeah. Yeah, we have rankings. This episode finished, but you can see what we thought about these other movies on Film Colossus, just checking our rankings. And then we'll be back next episode talking about, what's the movie?
Knock, what is it called? Knock at the Cabin?
Knock at the Door? Knock at the Cabin Door?
It's whatever that movie's called, we'll be talking about it. And hopefully we agree cabin. About everything.
Yeah.
Because that's nicer when we're just friends that agree about stuff.
God forbid.
Okay. So yeah, check out the website, filmcolossus.com. If you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/filmcolossus. You can hear all the episodes ad-free. We'll add perks to that eventually, but there's nothing yet.
Yeah, but thanks for listening.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for grueling through that. And is there other stuff we're supposed to say? I don't think so. I guess that's it. So until next time, I'm too tired to think of anything to say at the end here.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Got a big question to ask. Anything? Do you want to do